Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind. In the studio with me, Ben Starr and Julian Joiello, we're looking today at what's keeping a lot of people's minds active today. No? We're going to look at what's happening in Ferguson. We're going to look at it from a few different perspectives. But one of them is the research that was done by Ben Starr about this. And Ben asked me a question just before now. He said, how does this compare to all the other times that you've seen things like this and burnings from the 60s and so on and so forth? So over my years, I've seen many things that have turned into this kind of a rebellion. It just seems now it gets more and more serious, bigger, and there's less negative reaction. There's less shootings. There's less tear gas. You know what I mean? There's less offensive against the people.
Well, I noticed that not last night, but the first night that the grand jury decision was announced. So that was Monday night. The police in the St. Louis area were not, there was no presence at all, let alone tear gas. I mean, you saw hardly any police presence. It wasn't until last night that there was a heavy police presence and National Guard presence. But we didn't see any of that Monday night. And that's why, it seems that's why many of the businesses in Ferguson and along West Florissant, major commercial drag over there, were affected.
So Ben, you've been through this. You're a social activist in many ways, and you've been through this politically. What do you see is going on here?
Well, I see a situation that's very sad, first of all, and it's sad from every angle that you look at it. But I see a situation that's extremely emotionally charged on all sides of the issue. People who feel whatever way they feel, it seems like there's an intense amount of emotion, and that's not being helped by, in many ways, the way that the media has chosen to present it. And when I say the media, I mean the television networks, or the way that I think that the government has handled it, the officials have handled it. I think the timing of the announcement was a disaster, and it couldn't have been timed worse. And I think the response was...
Or it couldn't have been timed better.
I don't know about
that. I mean,
that.
Just take a look at that, Ben, because we're having a balance here. By timing it so badly, you had something so obviously wrong, it made the rebellion even stronger.
That's for sure.
So?
That's for sure. But and what I see, I guess, to go back, is there's this emotional component. And it's very difficult to have a tempered view of anything when that view is so strongly affected by emotions. So I see a lot of extremism on both sides. I see people who, you know, have a sort of this like racist attitude that that somehow this young man Michael Brown deserved to die, which is ridiculous. And then on the other side, I see people with an attitude that all cops everywhere are evil, and I don't agree with that either. Now, I don't agree with the actions of this particular police officer, but I think that there's a need to sort of acknowledge, not only acknowledge the wrongs, but also step back and sort of look at it from a more of an objective perspective. Because I think that the emotion, while it can be constructive, is what's keeping people from having more of a holistic view of everything.
In what way does it prevent it, Ben? In what way? How does it get in the way? I mean, anger gets in the way?
Sure, anger gets in the way, you know, on all sides. And... you know, I it makes me sad to see a community like Ferguson that's already a community that's struggling, a community where opportunities are scarce, and what happened in that community Monday night, it's sad because, you know, businesses were destroyed, and those are businesses that serve the community and that provide jobs to the community, and it's very sad to see that sort of thing happen.
It's very sad. You mean it saddened you to see this happen?
It did. I mean, the whole thing saddens me from the get-go. I'm sad to see a young man, you know, senselessly lose his life. And I'm sad to see the sort of the aftermath and the effects of that. And I'm sad to see the violence that happened. I mean, it should be noted that there were many peaceful protests across the country last night. And that peacefulness is to be commended. Because there's, you know, there's nothing that comes out of destruction. The only change, I think, can come through creation and positivity and dialogue. But the destruction saddened me a lot.
We're speaking with Ben Stark. Ben, what do you think? I mean, we heard from one caller yesterday who said to us, you know, we'd like to open this up. We'd like to hear it from your perspective. And my perspective is usually one that somewhere encompasses both. You know, I don't take one side or the other. And it's not that I'm afraid to take one side or the other. I certainly have feelings about it. But I'm always trying to get people to understand the other side, to get a feeling about it.
Sure.
Like, what is the possible cost to Darren Wilson? What's the possible cost? What's his possible? What does he have to live with? What's his life going to be like?
Well, I mean, the guy has to live the rest of his life knowing that he took a life, first and foremost. And I mean, he said last night that he has a clear conscience. I don't know how that can be, because regardless of whether he feels he was justified or not, I mean, if you've taken a life, that is permanent.
Well, I'm not so sure. I mean, there's an awful lot of people I know who are soldiers who take lives all the time.
Right.
So what if he considers himself a soldier in the battle between good and evil?
First of all, his law enforcement career is over. I mean, he'll never get another job in law enforcement. That's just not going to happen.
He won't get promoted to some big desk job all the way up?
I seriously doubt it.
Okay,
I mean,
but it's possible. If they don't want to kick him out.
He's already resigned.
Mm-hmm.
He's resigned from the police force. But this is a guy who's going to have to spend the rest of his life having something like this following him around. And I think that he deserves to have it follow him, because we should be held accountable for our actions. And many people are angry that he hasn't been held accountable in the justice system.
Okay, so what he has to deal with is the fact that for the rest of his life, this is going to be following around. He's going to be known for this. His kids are going to be known for having this kind of a dad.
Right.
Right? He's going to be looking over his shoulder for the rest of his life, seeing if somebody's going to come after him. He's going to be living in a purgatory,
I would imagine.
That's a very difficult place to be.
Yeah, I can't imagine that he's ever going to have a normal life. And that's not to, you know, that's not to justify or make anything right. Because to me, I look at this situation and I don't see any winners in this situation.
Ben, but here's my question. If Darren Wilson had said, damn, I made a mistake. God, it was horrible what I did. That was horrible. I just made a complete mistake. I'm so sorry, right? And still paid no penalty.
I think people would still be upset that he acknowledged guilt and was not being held accountable. So, I mean, essentially, I think it's a sad situation, because there's no, you know, Darren Wilson didn't win by not being indicted. And if he had been indicted, the family of Michael Brown wouldn't be winning. I mean, it seems everyone's a loser in this situation. That's what makes it sad to me, that there's no, you know, you'd like to see some constructive positive eventually come out of it. And it was good to see last night that, you know, the protests across the country were peaceful and people were marching in solidarity with each other in a positive way. That is good to see. But I don't know. I see it as a scenario that's sort of like you said earlier. I mean, we discussed this before we went on the air. I asked you about how you saw the civil rights movement in the 60s, and, you know, you'd seen similar sort of unrest and along racial lines. And that to me is, I don't know, I think it's all relevant and it's all important. And in some ways it's like this repetition, this cyclical part of history that doesn't go away.
Yes, and it seems exactly like that. It's almost like a Fibonacci, you know. It's going to spin off into a new place again, 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 until we get to a certain place. Very interesting. We may have a guest appearing on the air with us, but we are going to take telephone calls about this today, as testy as it is. The telephone number is 212-957-2729. Now, here's what I'm going to ask of you callers. 957-2729. No matter how heated you feel, please, number one, no curse words, right? That we've got to get that off. Number two, if you do feel heated about it, please give us a little space to understand you and to have people understand you and what you're saying. So bear with us. We're going to We're going to take a call, and we have we've actually starting already, I see.
Yeah, we're getting phone calls. Lines are getting lit up.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's an important issue, and a lot of people want to talk about this because this is the biggest story right now nationwide and worldwide. This is a story that's being heard around the world, being reported across the world, and it's important.
Okay, so our first caller is Emily. Emily, hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Emily. I am an activist. I live in Newark, New Jersey. And I would just really like to argue the idea or challenge the idea that no one wins. I think that white supremacy wins in this situation. I think that this is a system. It's not like a sad all-around kind of thing, like whiteness and white privilege and a system that, you know, deems black life unvaluable or not valuable. That's who wins here. So I think it's kind of strange to just make it seem like a, you know, like a senseless tragedy. It's not senseless. It's, you know, very, it's intentional state violence. It happens too often to call it senseless. Senseless is drunk driving. You know what I'm saying? Murder of black men over and over and over and over again by law enforcement and not being state-sanctioned and protected by the law, that's not senseless.
Ben.
Well, I understand that notion, and I agree with elements of it, but I also think that maybe, you know, from a legal perspective, that part of the reason that he was not indicted was that, you know, it sort of reminds me, and there's echoes of the situation with George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin, and you know, a situation where he was charged with murder, they didn't convict him, and yet I believe that if they had charged him with manslaughter, that he would be behind bars right now facing justice. So that, you know, that was an issue, I think, that came down to semantics. But, you know, I understand that it is an issue of state violence, and police should be held accountable. I mean, there was just a situation here in Brooklyn this past week.
Absolutely.
And those are not acceptable situations. But
so, Emily, tell me, when you see this and you see the non-accountability of it and you see the way it's been, you've been observing injustice all your life, haven't you?
Yes.
Right? In how many different venues, how many different places have you seen it and dealt with it?
I mean, I think it's literally everywhere where we are. I think that your identity, when you're born, I'll speak about United States just to keep it here, but
sure.
I think your identity defines, in general, how you're treated, and it defines whether it matters if you're killed, right?
So your identity determines what value you are, right?
Exactly.
And your identity,
the way that you're valued by the world around you.
So how would the world around you see you? Would they say, "Ah, she's a lady from what?" How would they pin you out and say that you have no value? How would they characterize you?
Well, to me, I mean, I'm a person who has a lot more privilege than the people who are being murdered right now. I'm a white person. I do, you know, face some issues because I'm queer. I'm an LGBTQ person. But at the same time, what I am seeing is I need, you know, as white allies, as white people who are observing, witnessing, and in some ways implicitly participating in the white supremacist system, we need to speak out about how it's not about individual cases, right? It's like, we're seeing these implicit biases and these sort of like soft violence every day, and then it turns into hard violence every other day.
Yes, so, and you've seen enough of it in your time. You've seen it both with the women's movement, the gay activist movement, the civil rights movement in so many different ways, right?
Yes. I work with young people in Newark, New Jersey, and most of the young people I work with are black and brown. And what I see is in the public school system, I mean, the civil servants are, whether it be the police or, you know, public school teachers on a whole, not to, you know, not to say that there are no good exceptions, but really conditioning people to be valued according to their identities.
I hear you, Emily. Emily, it's really beautiful that we've got you there with those children, helping to show them that this is not necessarily the only way to go. Oh, I think we just lost Emily. You still there, Emily? No, we did. The telephone number here is 212-957-2729. That's really great. That's really great, especially when you think about people who are working with the children. Ben?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I do understand the notion of, you know, this state violence, and I think that it's important that law enforcement is held accountable. But by that same token, I don't think that, I mean, when I was younger, I was very much anti-authoritarian, very much rejected police. You know, I would call cops, you know, derogatory words and call them pigs and other words. And I no longer feel that all cops are evil. And just like I don't think that, you know, all African Americans have a certain trait or characteristic. I mean, I think that that's what I mean, you know, when we were discussing at the beginning of a sort of like a more sort of tempered view. I mean, it seems like everyone on either side of this issue either thinks that, you know, this cop was like woke up that morning deciding he was going to kill someone, or that this kid was, you know, somehow deserving it. And I don't think that either of those are true.
What made you temper your aggression against the establishment? What was it, Ben? Something changed in you where you found that your I mean, I used to be the same way. I was on every line you could imagine, and I was up there, and I was fighting everything you could possibly fight, especially since I came through the Vietnam War.
Right.
Right, so there I am, you know, marching against and dealing with the violence.
I wouldn't say it was a specific event for me, but I know that as a kid and a teenager and a student, that I was very much, you know, anti-authoritarian, anti-police. And I don't think there was any definite event. Just over time, I think I don't know. I just got less angry, maybe. I don't know.
Well, we'll talk about that. We're going to take a call from Ress. Hi, Ress. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand.
Yes.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up the fact that there is no double jeopardy on indictments. Now, this cop can be re-indicted by a truly independent prosecutor. And where the wrong was done was a prosecutor who had a conflict of interest, who didn't do his job, and allow the system to go awry. And I think we have to get out in the street, and if we have to, do property damage until they reindict this officer. And it makes me so angry. I'm nearly 60 years old. I'm ready to go out there and help them myself.
Russ, let me ask you a question. When you say property damage, even property damage against the people who are shopkeepers?
Property damage, there's insurance for this kind of damage, Armand. What's more important? The damage?
Well, wait a minute. Wait. Let's back that up, Russ.
Okay.
There is insurance for this kind of thing, but then the insurance rate for the people goes up higher because they have to go through the insurance company, and the insurance company has to pay off the shopkeepers. And so then we're once again bringing it backwards.
That's,
see,
Armand,
I don't think I understand the desire to stamp your foot as loud as you can and make the biggest sound you could possibly make and say, no, this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But
white people don't listen unless you do that.
Maybe you're right.
I'm sorry, Armand.
I said maybe you're right, yes?
The cost to society is far greater when these young black men are continually shot in the street by white cops and nothing is done about it, okay? I'll go down and burn one today for you, Armand. Thank you.
Thank you, Russ. Yeah, good. 212-957-2729. It's such an interesting question about how do you get about getting the change. And I've never known the change taking place without somebody taking a big risk and doing something very dramatic, which is what Ress is saying. You know, you got to stamp your foot louder than everybody else. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, look, it's a very emotional issue. It's very intense. And I don't agree with the notion of doing property damage, but I do agree with speaking out, and I do agree with protesting in the streets and making your voice heard. And I can't endorse any kind of violence, you know, any kind, including the violence that happened to Mike Brown. I don't endorse that. I don't endorse people hurting each other or hurting other people's property. I mean, I think that that's something that we have to be better than that.
212-957-2729. Let's take another caller. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Hi. I want to ask you, have you ever seen the documentary that was put out by Frontline called A Class Divided? Jane Elliott did an experiment, a blue-eyed, brown-eye experiment where she separated second-grade students.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, I highly recommend that everyone watch it.
Let's do that again. You can see it. You can do it online.
And you can watch the program for free.
How do you get it now? What would we be looking under, Jane Elliott?
Jane Elliott, A Class Divided.
That was a beautiful study. I mean, it's so perfect.
Yes, and I feel it very much relates to what's going on now, because no one ever, in my opinion, no one ever gets to the essential issue, which is the damage done from 300 years of slavery. Because you can't just say, oh, well, you have civil rights now and everything's all right. The damage is very deep, and these kids were in the class for like 1 or 2 days, and they had very serious effects from the experiment. And I did talk to Jane Elliott, and she told me that what she would do was that she would do the experiment in the beginning of the year, and she spent the rest of the year letting the kids get over what had happened to them, because it was so profound. And I don't think that anyone deals with this issue. It's not even an economic or educational issue, because I know many black people are highly educated and they're doing well financially, but there's still deep scars because of the racism in this country.
Sure.
I never hear this talked about. I never hear this mentioned. I don't think it's gotten any better since the 1960s.
Nothing. You don't think there's been any improvement at all?
Very superficially, not in a deep way. We're dealing with the same issues. I actually asked Jane Elliott. I said, well, what do you think, after Obama was elected, I said, well, what do you think is the situation now racially? And I agree with her. She said worse than ever, because it's more covert. It's like, oh, let's pretend. We can't say this outright. We can't say that white people can't say that they're racist outright, so they do it behind people's backs. And I think that's worse. I'd rather have the signs up. I really would than what's going on now, because it's all this, oh, yeah, well, it's just all this pretense.
Ben, what do you think?
I heard a lot of people making that assertion after Obama was elected, that it actually was not necessarily the best thing, because now it allowed people to have this sort of cop-out of being, you know, if people were racist, they would have a cop-out to say, well, you know, I voted for Obama. So I do understand that, and it's definitely a legitimate idea that's been circulated.
Sherry, let me ask you something. In your life, I'm trying to think of all the people who are activists, including me and Ben. Have you been in the middle of injustice in your life? Have you seen it right from childhood?
Yes. Yes, I have.
And where was it? Is it in early childhood, all of us? I certainly saw it. Ben certainly saw it.
Yes, I saw it in early childhood. I've seen it my entire life.
Yeah. So do you think that those of us who carry the wounds of those original injustices get affected when we observe the information? Do you think we could just stand aside objectively and say, hey, you know, I'm just looking on from the side and this is what I see?
Well, I think we can see it in a different way. I do try to be objective. I think every situation, I don't judge. I judge every situation on its own merits, and I like to look at the facts of a case. But it's just that the underlying, it's not even about this case. I think what's going on in Ferguson.
Wait. Before you go there, as I was asking you about it personally, Sherry, if you don't mind.
Sure.
The passion that goes into it, the passion, seems to bring to it something in addition. Now, Ben said something a little while ago. He used to be very anti-establishment. I used to be very anti-establishment. Something happened over time with him and with me and with a few other people I know where it kind of leveled out, where we were not pro-establishment, but we didn't have that fervor, that thing. Now, that fervor may be necessary to make for any kind of a change. But I'm not sure if when the people have that fervor, it's not just coming not just from the situation, but from trying to correct all the injustices in the past, the personal injustices as well as the social injustices. You know what I mean? It carries with you. It carries with you.
Right,
and sometimes
right,
I'm sure,
yeah.
Sherry, sometimes I am sure you looked at this situation and you wept. And you felt that weeping come up. Is that true?
No, I didn't weep. No. I just said business as usual in the United States.
How far are you from the tear that this really manifests and expresses?
That's an interesting question.
I know.
I'd have to reflect on that and get into a place of feeling. I can't answer that off right.
Okay, so if you would, Sherry, you don't have to answer it. You know that there is somewhere in the neighborhood, there is a place of feeling which is not the place of thinking, necessarily. And in this place of feeling, there's a huge sob for what's happening in the world now. Because I feel it, the people around me feel it. Ben says he's sad. He feels sadness. And when he talks about it, there are tears in his eyes. And that's what's available to us. And I think for all of us, what we need to do somewhere in here is probably shed that tear before we get into action. Don't let it stop you from action.
Right. No, I agree. I think it's a man's inhumanity to man, that seeing each other as separate beings, not relating to another person. That's where the tear is. That here we are on this planet, and people are just insane. People are cruel. People are mean. There's also the other side where there's wonderful people. But this is the fact of what planet Earth is.
The wars in the Middle East, the wars
all over the place. This is insanity.
Sherry, is there one person?
Day, whether it's in Ferguson or anywhere, it's insanity.
Okay, Sherry, is there, like this. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, is there one person in your life throughout your childhood who saved your bottom, who really came along and represented right? Do you have one person that you grew up, when you were growing up, there was one person you could look at that you admired, or who admired you, who loved you the right way?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Geez, I wish you had had it. I wish you had had a radio there, you know, at least to listen to WBAI and the Positive Mind. There's somebody there, should have been there for you.
I did, but you know what? The thing is, I don't regret that because it led me on an inner journey, and I would not have gone on that journey if I had had that. I became a student of Krishnamurti.
Mm-hmm.
I did many things because of that, because I wanted to find out what truth was, mm-hmm. and what pain was and how to deal with it.
Yeah, so it kind of took you to the same place, one way or another. Anyway, thank you for your kindness. Thank you for your contribution.
You're a beautiful person.
Show,
Armand.
Sure, Sherry. Thank you very much.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back after this.
No, we're not going to take a short break. That's Ben's taking a short break. We're going to be here for another minute. No, we can't take your calls right now. We do have calls coming in. We're going to have to put them on hold. If you would stay with us, we'll be back with you in just about, a couple of minutes. We have some special music for you. When we come back, we'll take your calls, and we'll do your response, okay?
Thank you.
This is Armand DeMille.
Yes, hi.
Hi there. Welcome with Thelonious Monk.
Yeah, Round Midnight.
Yeah, how did you know that?
Oh, come on. I grew up listening to jazz. I'm a young old soul.
Yeah.
My father was 50 when he had me, so I grew up listening to Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Ella Fitzgerald.
So I figured Round Midnight was kind of appropriate for what's happening today. We had a few other choices, but I thought Round Midnight would kind of bring in the mellow of it. So how about you, Bruce? What's your reaction?
Well, you know, first of all, I was listening to some of the previous callers, and I want to commend the first caller especially because, you know, she identified herself as a white woman who enjoys white skin privilege, and I just thought that it was very honest of her. It's just so rare for me to hear white people be so honest in terms of how white skin privilege benefits them, you know. And I think that that's part of the problem right there, is that we live in a very racist society, but I think that most white people don't realize that they're racist. You know, it's not that they intend to be racist, but they live in a society that, whereas they are the beneficiaries of racism in the history of white supremacy. So when your guest, I'm sorry, I don't know his name, who's in the studio with you.
Oh, that's Ben Starr. He's not only my guest, he's also the associate producer. But when he said...
Oh, okay. Well, he said something to the effect that he doesn't believe that the officer got up that morning with the intention to kill a black person. To me, I think that is really, and I've heard a lot of people use that analogy. They said the same thing with the Amadou Diallo shooting, that those four officers didn't get up in the morning with the intention of shooting to death Amadou Diallo. That's beside the point. I think that's an oversimplification. The fact is that we still live in a system that allows things like this to happen. So it doesn't matter whether they went out with the intention to kill a black man that day. I mean, if you look at the way that this whole system is set up, you look at the prison industrial complex where blacks and, you know, Latinos are primarily the targets of small-time crimes, you know, the same crimes that white people commit on a daily basis, but they're not targeted. So, you know, the prisons are filled up with black and brown people. You know, it's no
accident.
Okay,
so Bruce, let me grab you for a minute here. So you're saying, you know, you're saying, look, you don't have to be even seeing the prejudice in your own head, but if you're going to shoot at something, you're going to think twice about the white guy, and you're going to think only once about the black guy.
Put it this way, I don't even think that they have to stop and think about it.
Because it seems automatic. Now, I want to ask you a question, but I want you to take me someplace, because I agree with you completely. Bruce, do you ever think in your lifetime that you're going to see this get to an end, where it's not going to happen? Can you imagine it? Can you imagine a world where this doesn't exist?
The only time I could see something like that happening, sadly to say, is if this world just ended. I hate to say that, but I don't think that white people, for the most part, are going to change. And I'm not saying that every white person is racist or every white person is evil. I have white friends. There are a number of white people that I admire and respect a great deal. Tim Wise is one of them. And I have white friends, you know, that I have, you know, spoken to and debated with.
Okay, but Bruce, to stay on the subject, yes, some of my best friends are.
No, I don't mean to go there, but I'm just saying that I don't see it changing drastically, because like one of your previous callers pointed out, I just think that the racism is more sophisticated.
Okay, now Bruce, you've been around for almost as much time as I've been around.
Well, I'm 45.
We've watched the changes take place. We've watched a
but
little bit of change.
Changes.
Yes, absolutely. Don't. I understand superficial. I understand they're small. So if we had an invasion from another planet, if we had a world crisis, everybody would gather together, and at some point they would be shoulder to shoulder and say, "We gotta fight the Walking Dead."
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would do something to gather themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be one way that it would happen if we had an outside enemy. And
but
there's no other way.
But even under that scenario, I still think that racism would eventually rear its ugly head again.
Oh, sure. Send a black guy out front.
But it's like people are just going to... Listen, this system exists because people benefit from it. Mm. And they don't want to give up white skin privilege. I mean, it's just something that they don't want to... I'm sorry, but the system of white supremacy is so profound mm-hmm. in our culture. Most people don't identify it as being such because it's like there's a comfort level
sure.
that people have with it. And so it's like if you're a beneficiary and if a system gives you advantages, why would you want it to change?
Yeah, unless you're one of the ones who have achieved that level of existence where you become part of the other world, where you become the fortunate, where you have excess. Now you kind of look and say, well, hey, wait a minute, I got into the club. Now let me look down and not let everybody else in my club.
But you see, it's like, I also don't think it's going to change this because we keep having the same response to it. Like, you know, the president will get on television and he'll say, well, you know, people have a right to protest, but peacefully. In other words, mm-hmm. you know, don't cause any ruckus. Don't do anything that's going to make the white establishment feel uncomfortable. You know, I mean, they would have preferred had black people just gone home and prepared their Thanksgiving dinners.
So you agree with Ress. Sometimes you got to make noise.
Yeah, and I'm
to
not
be heard.
Suggesting burning things down because that doesn't solve anything either. I suggested people boycotting Christmas this year. Mm-hmm. Make them feel it in the pocket. That hasn't been done since, like, the 60s.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for listening. I'm glad you were able to contribute with us today.
Thank you. Bye.
Sure. 212-957-2729. Yes, I can see how the blindness so easily appears. Here comes 212-957-2729. Well, we've got a stream of callers. If you get a busy signal, you just got to dial back because the number of lines are limited and there's a number of different people calling in. So Bruce says you got to take some kind of action. It's got to be dramatic action.
Yeah, and I do appreciate Bruce's call. And to respond to what he said, I really don't want to oversimplify the situation, but my comments were sort of in response to what I see as an oversimplification that I've just seen, you know, on both sides of this issue.
Sure.
And I think it's not black and white, so to speak, that there's a lot of sort of gray areas that need to be explored.
You know, it's an interesting thing. Bruce found the one commonality. I wanted to ask him about his experience with jazz with the same issue. Because that's where I learned my difference. That's where it didn't exist. I was a musician, you know, and as a musician, there's no difference except
you,
I couldn't.
You can neither play or you can't.
I couldn't play as well. There was a difference. 212-957-2729. June, you're on the line with us. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, June.
There's a couple of things I'd like to say. First of all, what's the other person's name?
Ben Starr.
Ben Starr. Ben, I'd like to address this to you. Are you listening?
Yes.
Okay. If you had control of the whole thing, you know, the delivering the results of the findings.
The grand jury?
Yeah, the jury.
Right.
And you wanted to paint the people in Ferguson in a bad light, you know, would you, number one, announce it at an hour at 8 o'clock at night when you know that the young people are out? And also, would you not have any fire policemen or anything in the black neighborhoods where the burning is going down?
Well, let me ask you before you go to him, June. June, what do you think? You have a very clear opinion about this. Don't ask Ben. What about you?
I'm only stating the facts. This is
ridiculous, of course. And you're saying... You have an opinion, not asking him his opinion.
Well, it sounds like, if I understand you, June, that you're saying that this was done on purpose to make the community of Ferguson look bad.
Absolutely.
Okay, and what did you feel when that happened, when you saw that? Did you feel outrage?
No, I wasn't surprised.
See, that's the thing that seems to be happening.
It's like the thing that people are responding to is that. I mean, it's like the media manipulates you know, and I don't feel that that's ever addressed. And when you spoke to the last person about what he would do, you know, this is how I would do it. It will never be the same unless I had control of the media, and that's never going to be. You know, it's never going to be because of our educational system. Number one, our economic system. You know, the whole deal. We're not in a position to take control, and they'll never let us take control.
Okay,
they,
June. So let's
the white man.
Let's take it with this for a moment. So one of the things that you express is the powerlessness that you feel every time you see an injustice, every time you see somebody in New Orleans on a roof waiting for help and they can't get help because they're maybe the wrong image, every time you take a look and you see something that is happening that just once further proves that nobody really cares, you feel this kind of dejected feeling. You kind of fall apart in the inside and it just lets a little gas out of you. You don't get outraged. You don't get angry any longer because you're tired of getting angry. You've been there, you know, you don't want to be angry anymore, right? So you just say, there it is, there's that very thing. And it takes your heart out.
No, absolutely not. What did Mario Favio say? Oh, I don't really know how to pronounce his name. You know, the hands on the wheel, just keep going, never stop. No, I don't feel dejected, I can't. There's no way I can do that. It's not the way to go. This is what I will say, though. That I don't think that burning down buildings, any of that stuff is going to work. But I do feel the only way is to hit them in the pocket. And I'm not talking about boycotting Christmas. You know, I'm talking about it like farm workers, something that's ongoing, that this is never ceased. That's kept up. The energy is kept up. Boycotting, maybe Walmart. But not only that, you have to have a reason for doing it. You have to have an end result. You know, and that's what our leaders need to get together.
Well, June, why do you think? Let's say you said let's boycott Walmart, and everybody of color decided, yes, we're going to boycott Walmart. Why do you think many people wouldn't?
Well, actually, I'm not saying everybody of color. I would want it to be a movement. Just like the people are in the streets now,
yeah,
all over the country, it's not only people of color, it's all people.
So
many
why would certain people not?
All ages.
Why would certain people not, June? What's in your mind when you think about that and you say, look,
I don't even go there. Where I want to go. I want to say that I'm saying that it will be successful, just like the Montgomery boycott. I'm saying it will be successful, but what it takes is energy, sustained energy. To make it happen, and it has to be over, and not just something immediate like the 4 days of shopping and Christmas, boy, I got Christmas, you know, none of that. That Band-Aid kind of thing. I'm talking about something sustained, and it's over a long period of time, and it will only work if it is sustained, and it will only work toward the end, not the beginning.
June, thank you very much for calling in. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Sure, 212-957-2729. You could understand the despair that goes behind that. You could understand. And what she says is, no, you got to keep your foot on the pedal. You just got to keep going. You have to keep going. You can't stop. You can't be passive about it. 212-957-2729. So, Ben, your reaction to June?
Well, I definitely agree with her that you can't let these sort of things just make you dejected and get you down. I mean, if your aim is to improve the world that we live in and make a better world, then, yeah, there is only one answer, which is to just keep going and sort of soldier on. And, yeah, I think also, you know, I agree with both what, you know, some of what June said and what Bruce said about hit him in the pocketbook sort of thing. More so agree with June about how there would need to be sort of a long-term effort to really make a difference, because I think a 2-3 week sort of holiday season boycott, while it would send a message, then, you know, it's over in 2 or 3 weeks.
Sure. Okay, we have Bentley on the line. Hi, Bentley, this is Armand DeMille.
Hey, Armand.
Hi there.
We have a systemic racism issue, and it can change, but there are a bunch of buffers in the way. America from the beginning. It was founded by white men, and it became a land of immigrants. However, America was stolen by the white men, and they have to protect this loot, America, at all costs. So what any nationality will do when they secure a loot is to make sure that their nationality have the upper hand, have the extra buck at all times to maintain ownership of that loot. Now, the second thing that presents itself as a buffer is the lobbyists that take away our elected officials from us. Major issues, think tanks, all of that, they're blocking our access to our government that we install. The next issue that is right there and we refuse to see it is...
Bentley, hold on just 1 second. You see, I see our clock is going and I don't want to run out of time while you're speaking, but talk to me about this, what it means to you personally. Talk about how this, not just from a look of the entire thing, but what do you see personally? What does it feel like to you? When you see this going on, do you feel the indignance? Do you feel the despair? Do you feel disheartened?
I feel it for those with limited understanding to the system. But as for myself, I know it's more of ignorance on our officials, our leaders' part. And some of it is willful ignorance on their part, just to maintain status quo. For example, Amand, President Obama, he mastered the Middle East affair. He was a champion for a Palestinian cause. And the moment he become elected, that is off the table. He's like, he's a dummy when it comes to the Middle East. You understand?
So that gives you that same feeling that there it is again. There are the guys who are playing the same game. And I, Bentley, I at least can see it, and it makes a big difference to me to be able to see it. And when I see the people who don't see it, I feel sad for them.
That's just the exact way I feel. No different.
Yeah, I thank you so much, Bentley. Thank you for calling in and sharing that sentiment.
No problem.
Thank you. 212-957-2729. We have a few minutes more. Yeah, we could take another call. 212-957-2729. Here we go.
Phone line's been lit up today.
Yeah. It touches me, though. You know, it touches me, everyone I'm hearing. I'm just afraid that, you know, in my own way, I'm reflecting my own lack of being on the inside of it.
How so?
You know, it's like, I don't really know what it's like to be Bentley. I don't know what it's really like to be with my list. Ress or Bruce. I don't know what it's like to be on the inside. I would like to learn more. I'd like to feel more about it.
You at one time, you know, like you said, you were very anti-authoritarian at one point. So maybe you did at one point feel the emotions that Ress expressed.
But when I was blind. I just hated anything that wore a uniform or was repressive. 212. Oh, here we are. Tammy's on the line. Hi, Tammy. It's Armand DeMille.
How you doing, Armand?
Hi there.
This issue, like Ben said, I can look at it in two aspects, legally and morally. Legally, I think if somebody does something wrong, they can either get caught or not get caught. When they get caught, if they have what I call a backup, they're going to get away with it. If they don't, they're going to go to jail. And the backup is either money or whatever power you have.
Sure.
But I want to talk about the police officer that Ben said he had to have some type of guilt. Like you said, Armand, I think anybody who connects himself or herself to any religion or race or nationality, this to me is mental disorder. And at one point in his life, that space that you called it emotional or thinking space, get together with that space that you also call the feeling space. And then the person is going to realize, It can't be tomorrow. It can't be next 10 years what he did.
Tammy, let me ask you something. Let me ask you, Tammy.
Yes.
When you heard of it, what was your immediate reaction?
My immediate reaction, of course, I'm not white, I'm not black, I'm not Latino. I said, if somebody shoots a kid 10 times, this is anger.
Yeah, you felt the anger?
This is anger. This is absolutely anger that has to be dealt with. Now, what a legal aspect of it, my opinion, it might be different. I wanted him to be indicted. You got to give the guy to ask him why, not just, okay, have a nice day because somebody likes you or you belong to some organization. But the whole point is, to me, we have to look at it as some kid got killed.
Tammy, we're going to have to be going, and I really appreciate your contribution. Thank you for being a part of this today. We wanted to extend it because we thought it was important. Ben, beautiful work, and I really appreciate what you did. And Julian, thanks.
It was fantastic listening to the community today.
Yeah, great calls today. Thanks, everyone, for calling in and making your voice heard.
All right, my friends, we will be back with you Tuesday at 1 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM. We have no time for further calls. I wish we did. But, you know, maybe on the next program or in Gary Null tomorrow, you can give a call in. 212. Well, listen, if you want to reach me, you could go to email armand@thepositivemind.com, and I'll be speaking to you soon. It's more-